He pictured her face lighting up as he relayed the info. Midway up the stairs, reception returned, and his phone began buzzing with missed messages. Aditi, he thought. Now I'm going to get it. He glanced down at the screen as he reached the top of the stairs. He was half right. Someone was in trouble. He nearly ran face first into the door as he read Ren's message. Basement, Nat Gallery. Cornered, Van Man 1. Help. His heart sank as his pulse soared. He raced toward the exit. He wasn't even going to read the second text, the latest from Luke, but the first line was already visible on the screen. Just saw R at gallery. Where you at, playa? Alex swiped back to Ren's message and nearly put his finger through the screen as he punched her name to call her. He went through the front door of the library as his call went to voicemail. He asked the first three people he saw how to get to the National Gallery. The third guy knew. He had to take the northern line again, heading south this time. Alex burned with impatience as he listened. Van Man. Liam could already have her. He wished he was there already. And suddenly, he realized he knew someone who was. Saw R at gallery. As he sprinted across the street toward Euston Station, he punched his phone again. The time had come to return his cousin's messages. The order had its muscle. The friends needed some of their own. It was a quick, urgent phone call. With someone else, Alex might have had to convince him that the danger was real, but Luke had already seen Liam in action. His last words before Alex lost signal in the station, "I'm on it." The train took minutes, but felt like hours. When it finally pulled into Charing Cross, Alex burst through the door and broke free ahead of the pack like a racehorse. He dodged fast cars and slow walkers and flew into the grand old building that housed the National Gallery. The first guards protested his pace. "Slow down there!" But it wasn't until the fourth guard that he ran into real trouble. The man was standing at the top of the stairwell, and Alex recognized his face from the airport. Alex grasped his amulet as they raced toward each other. Half a dozen museum-goers turned to watch. From their vantage point behind the action, it looked like the boy had pushed the guard with incredible force, sending him tumbling down the stairs. Only the guard had a clear view of what had really happened. The force had come from the boy's hand, all right, but he had never touched him. Alex charged down the stairs, hopping over the tumbling thug and leaving him lying on the landing. But when he reached the bottom of the stairs, he found himself in a battleground. Ren was lying on the floor, eyes closed and hands tied. Liam was kneeling next to her, wearing her messenger bag over his shoulder and wrapping her bound wrists with a scarf. Luke was backed into a corner facing two more thugs, one wearing a guard's uniform.
"About time, cuz," Luke called.
He was standing in a wide stance with his arms out and his palms up like an NFL lineman. He was cornered, but neither of the thugs seemed too eager to rush in on him. Alex could only imagine the tackles and turns his cousin had used to stall them so far. Liam followed Luke's eyes and spun around. He didn't seem particularly surprised to see Alex.
"Look who's here," bellowed the big man.
Alex gritted his teeth and squeezed down hard on his amulet. The wind that comes before the rain, he thought as he raised his free hand. He squeezed his fingers into a sharp point and corrected himself. The wind that comes before the pain. A lance of concentrated air caught Liam directly under his chin, sending him reeling backward. As the other thugs turned and shifted to get out of the way, Luke quicksilvered out between them. Without slowing down, he lowered his shoulder and crashed into the back of Liam's legs, sending the big man toppling over him and onto the floor.
"How'd you do that?"
said Luke, a look of sheer bafflement on his flushed face.
"It looked like you just, like, pointed at him."
Alex glanced down at the scarab. "I'll have to tell him," he thought, "but it would have to wait." "Behind you!" called Alex. The other thugs were scrambling over their lardy leader as Liam rubbed his head and tried to right himself. Luke darted to the right and then quickly cut back to the left, leaving the closest bruiser grasping at air. The thug switched targets and rushed toward Alex. He couldn't knock them both down at once with his wind power. His eyes sought out the biggest, heaviest object in the room. Unfortunately for Liam, that was him. Alex didn't know if he could hoist that much weight, but as the thugs raced toward him, they also raced toward Ren. She was defenseless on the floor, and the thought that they would kick into her filled him with rage and power. As Liam rose onto one knee, his body jerked violently off the floor and spun toward the other two men. His big frame caught them at shoulder level, and all three landed in a heap on the cold tile floor, grunting from pain and surprise.
"All right, seriously, what was that?"
said Luke, rushing up to join Alex.
"There's no way that big dude could jump like that."
They both instinctively took up a defensive position over Ren's limp body.
"Get the one with a trinket," shouted Liam, climbing back to his feet. "He's the one we really want. Cut his bleeding hands off if you need to."
Alex heard a pair of mechanical schnicks as the two thugs rose from the floor with switchblades in their hands. The sharp steel caught the white museum light. 7 or 8 museum-goers had come down the stairs to see what all the shouting was about.
"They've got knives!" one of them shouted, and a real museum guard came running up.
Liam surveyed the growing crowd with a snarl of disdain. He glanced down at Ren. Alex caught his gaze and gave him a look of his own.
"Don't even think about it."
"You ain't seen the last of us, boys," called Liam.
The thugs bolted toward the stairs. The tourists shrieked and parted to let the knife-wielding goons pass. The lone guard made a valiant attempt at doing his duty, but Liam dismissed him with one powerful punch to the gut.
"My bag."
The voice was weak, but welcome. Ren was awake. She raised her head off the floor and squinted up toward the stairs as her would-be kidnappers disappeared from view. By the time Alex could take hold of his amulet again, the familiar olive-green messenger bag had already been carried off on Liam's shoulder.
"Sorry," Alex said, looking down at his bleary-eyed friend. "I am so, so sorry."
They both knew he wasn't just talking about the bag. Chapter 18. Aftermath. They were a strange sight, the three of them. Alex walked on one side of Ren, bending down to support her. Luke walked on the other side, bending down even farther since he was taller than both of them. Ren, for her part, had the look of a sleepwalker, her eyes just cracked open and her steps unsure. From the steps of the gallery, a guard called out to them to come back and wait for the police, but he quickly lost sight of them in the shifting throng of the midday metropolis. Fellow pedestrians eyed them suspiciously. But soon they were back in the relative safety of the good old Northern Line. Once the train doors closed behind them, Ren became just another sleepy kid. Jet-lagged, perhaps. Luke leaned across her to talk to Alex.
"Why didn't we wait for the cops?"
Alex shushed him as a few nearby heads turned. Luke was surprised by the shushing, and Alex was stumped by the question.
How could he explain this to his cousin?
Where would he even start? The powerful death cult, for whom the police were no obstacle? Or the full story, ancient spells and all, that would land them all in a mental institution? He glanced down at the spot where his amulet rested beneath his shirt.
"What is that thing?" Luke whispered. "There's no way those guys were just throwing themselves around." "You did that, right? With that bug thing?"
Alex gave Luke a look. "Not now."
"Well, at least tell me where we're going," he said, leaning back.
"Servants' quarters," mumbled Ren from the seat between them.
The three shaken friends settled back, into their seats and into their thoughts. Alex's were dark, as usual, but also unusually clear. His grim mood and obsessive behavior had driven his best friend away, and alone, she was easy prey. The thought that she could have suffered the same fate as his mom, kidnapped, taken from him, had rocked him to his core. As the train rumbled toward its destination, he stewed in a mix of guilt at himself, anger at the order, and gratitude for Ren's safety. And Luke's help. He glanced over at his cousin, who looked troubled too. Luke caught his cousin's eyes and whispered one last word to him, very clearly.
"Knives."
Alex nodded, but Luke had already looked away. Once again, he had taken running into the thugs in stride, literally. But the fact that they were armed this time had clearly caught him off guard. Luke wasn't used to the rules changing mid-game. Ren sat silently, sleepily between them. If she was still angry at Alex, she didn't show it. In fact, as the train jounced and jostled along, he felt her lean against him for support. The needle-torn sleeve of her injured shoulder felt rough against his arm. He understood her instinctively, the way that best friends do sometimes. "We're both hurting. It's okay." The train reached their stop, and the three disembarked. Enveloped by the anonymous chatter of the crowd, they could speak more freely now, and Luke had something to say.
"I don't know what you two are up to," he announced, "but it's more exciting than this camp, and no one at the camp has tried to stab me either. I want payback. I want in."
Alex and Ren exchanged quick glances.
No need for discussion. Luke wanted in, after what he'd just seen, after saving their bacon for a second time?
They just nodded. He was in already. On the way back, they stopped at a Tesco, a British chain that fell somewhere between supermarket and 7-Eleven, and loaded up on food and snacks. Mostly snacks. Then they walked into the little parking lot of the Campbell Collection.
Home again," said Alex.
Ren removed a Cadbury chocolate bar from the plastic bag, the last wisps of fog lifting from her eyes.
"Jiggity jog," she answered.
On the other end of town, Liam was about to learn that when you work for a death cult, failure has its consequences.
"Where you taking me, then?"
he asked, nervously eyeing the dark tunnel walls around him.
Cut at a steep, downward angle, the dirt and rock and clay didn't feel very secure.
He wasn't feeling very secure either. Still no answer from his guide. He risked a quick glance over, but the man's expression was hidden under a heavy iron mask in the shape of a crocodile head, like a knight's visored helmet gone wild.
"What's your name again?"
he asked nervously. He knew the man beneath the mask was powerful and dangerous, but the subterranean silence was driving him batty. He wanted to hear a voice other than his own.
"Tamisa."
The word came out in a low, reptilian hiss that sent a chill through Liam's system.
"Tommy what?"
he said. The other man looked over at him, leveling the sinister snout of the mask in his direction. Liam could just make out two small, dark eyes.
"Tamisa,"
the man repeated. Liam still didn't understand, but nodded anyway. The tunnel led steadily down into the dark English dirt. Liam looked up at the roof of the tunnel, where an uneven stripe down the center gave off a greenish-white glow, providing the only light.
"Must be one of those funguses," he thought. "The kind what glows in the dark."
He'd seen something about them on the BBC. More nervous the deeper they went, Liam continued his questions.
"Where you taking me?"
Tamisa was silent for a few more steps, and then,
"There's someone I'd like you to meet."
Liam wondered who on earth that might be. He'd already been told, they all had, that the man in the mask was in charge. The tunnel opened up into a larger chamber, and Tamisa slowed down half a step to allow him to enter first. Liam stepped inside. A very large man stood behind a stone slab near the back of the room, regarding Liam with black, lightless eyes. Liam felt a gut punch of fear and confusion at the sight, but he did his best to collect himself.
You wanted to see me?"
The looming figure croaked out a ragged response,
Liam didn't understand a word of it, but his masked guide seemed to.
"Another minion for you," said Ta-Mesa.
"Minion?" thought Liam. The sleeve of the man's filthy shirt was rolled up, and he was pushing through an array of sharp metal tools on a tray in front of him. The implements clinked against each other as Willoughby made his selection. He raised a thin, bronze probe, as long as a forearm and tipped with a small, sharp hook. Unlike the clods who'd prepared him, Willoughby knew which end to hold the thing by. He looked at Liam and smiled.
"Right then," said Liam,
more to himself than to the two men he was now sure meant to kill him. He'd been a loyal employee, if not an especially effective one, and the order had paid him well. But there comes a point when even a company man needs to declare free agency. He turned quickly on the heel of his boot, always fast for his size, and made for the tunnel. Ta-Mesa casually raised his right hand from beneath his long, dark robe and brought it back down. Just a quick flick of the wrist. At the mouth of the tunnel, Liam felt his body lift off the ground, his feet kicking out from underneath him. He could only flap his arms helplessly as he was slammed back down. The back of his head crashed into the hard-packed dirt and knocked him out cold. A small boy wearing clothes nearly as dirty as his master's emerged from the tunnel.
"Why is the little one alive?"
said Ta-Mesa as he stepped aside to let the child pass. Willoughby put down the hook and waggled his thick, sausage-like fingers. Ta-Mesa understood. Mummification was an intricate process. It required nimble fingers. A crude figure shambled in after the boy and began dragging Liam's limp body toward the stone slab. The creature stooped and pulled against the big man's weight, its fresh, tight wrapping straining and fraying from the effort. A second figure joined it, and together they lifted the body onto the cold stone slab. Ta-Mesa assessed the creature's decidedly non-nimble movements.
"They lose something after death," he thought.
The boy took up his post, his eyes haunted, his movements mechanical, and handed Willoughby his hook. Far overhead, back above the surface, and another few thousand feet up besides, strange clouds grew thicker and began to turn as Willoughby moved on to the next steps. The sky above opened up. Ta-Mesa watched the mummification with a detached, vaguely academic interest. He'd already known what had become of London's missing. Now, as the scent of the red rain filtered down into the murky air of the tomb, he understood what triggered that, too. He was more familiar than most with the ancient proverb, "Blood for blood." It meant little to him. He'd been sent here to aid the Walker, and he had done so, but he had no doubt who he was really serving. Let the Englishman have his crude toys, he thought. Soon, we will have true immortality, and the power that comes with it. Chapter 19. Breaking News. The three friends were huddled together in Alex's room. They were staring at the headline on the screen of Ren's laptop. "The doctor is out." Aditi was gone. Alex scanned the story quickly. Last seen leaving the British Museum after a day of emergency meetings. Observed talking on a cell phone, the records to which have not been recovered. He knew why. It was disposable. Toadmon had used one in New York, too, to keep their secret mission off his own phone. "Was she talking?" he said, thinking out loud. "Or leaving us messages?" Alex looked back at the screen, at the picture of Aditi, smiling just slightly beneath the tacky tabloid headline. All this time he'd thought they were in trouble, when really it was her. He remembered the argument in her office, how his impatience had brought out the worst in him again. More guilt. More fuel for his dark fire.
"Do you think, like, this cult got her?"
said Luke.
"The Order?"
he added, making the air quotes with his fingers.
"I almost hope so," said Alex, because there was another possibility, one they hadn't told Luke about yet. He remembered the gray shadow slipping from his body, the open mouth of the walker.
"I can't look at this anymore," said Ren, getting to her feet. Alex looked at her. Was she remembering the same thing, seeing her own soul torn from its moorings? Or, adrenaline used up, had the tranquilizer finally caught up with her? He tried to make eye contact with her, to get an idea of what she was thinking, but she was already heading toward the door.
"You can keep my computer for now," she said as she exited.
Alex watched his door close, and a moment later heard her door open. He turned back to find his cousin looking directly at him.
"All right, cuz," said Luke. "I'm not as smart as you, and I'm definitely not as smart as her, but I'm smart enough to know there's something you two aren't telling me."
Alex nodded. He'd already decided to let Luke know what was going on, and had barely bothered to hide it when he'd pulled Ren aside to tell her about Willoughby. There'd be no more keeping Luke in the dark. He'd seen so much already. Alex took a deep breath.
"Some of this is going to sound pretty crazy, and it might be kind of hard to believe," he began.
He carefully pulled the amulet from under his shirt and closed his left hand around it.
"So first, I want you to watch something."
And there, in the tiny room, Alex put on a little show. It was nothing much. He was still nursing a headache from the fight. He stacked some books, closed the window, flicked the light on and off, all with the wave of a hand. When he was done, Luke's eyes were wide with wonder. Alex told him everything. Well, almost everything. For some reason, he couldn't bring himself to tell his cousin how it had all started, with him lying on life support and his mom unfurling the lost spells in his hospital room. He couldn't bring himself to admit that one simple fact, that all of this, everything that had happened in New York and London and Cairo and around the world, was because of him. When he was done, Luke looked down at the floor and then back at the story still filling the laptop screen. Finally, he looked at his cousin.
"So," he began, and Alex could see his cousin struggling to comprehend the incomprehensible. "That's not algae out there, then, is it?"
Luke nodded toward the window. The rain had started again. The glass had turned red.
"So what do we do?" said Luke.
Alex peeled his eyes from the window and looked at his cousin.
"Remember that place I just told you about? Highgate?" said Alex. "We're gonna have to go back there."
"We have to go to a cemetery?" said Luke.
Alex pictured the walker's mud-streaked clothing.
"Under one," he said.
Alex knew he should probably be doing more research, but as the rain poured down, and as Ren rested next door, he spent the afternoon asking Luke everything he remembered about his Aunt Maggie. They were simple memories, after-hours tours of the museum, the bike she bought him for his 7th birthday, but they meant the world to Alex. Right now, memories were all he had left of his mom. Chapter 20. Burning Daylight. Finally, Alex knew he needed to snap back into action. He headed down the creaky stairs, Luke close behind him. It was just after 5 and the museum was already closed when they reached the first floor. Summers was puttering around, flicking off lights and straightening up. One look at him told them that he was upset. Eyes heavy and face puffy, it looked like he might even have been crying. Alex thought he knew why.
"You and Dr. Aditi are close, right?"
Summers stopped what he was doing and turned toward him.
"She, Priya, she was like a daughter to me,"
he said.
"I was her professor once. In another life, feels like.
The word was echoed in Alex's head. Was like a daughter. And he wasn't the only one to hear it.
We could still find her.
It was Ren, appearing at the edge of the room. Her hair was rumpled from sleep, but her eyes were alert. Summers gave her a tired smile, and a wave of guilt washed over Alex when he saw it. He felt responsible for all of the disappearances. So many had suffered because he'd been saved. But for this one, especially.
What do you need from me? Asked Summers. I take it this isn't a social call.
The Book of the Dead, Alex said without hesitation. We were going to get it from the British Museum once we figured out which spell. His voice trailed off. He hadn't exactly done that yet, but he had a good idea of the type of spell he needed. He thought he'd know it when he saw it.
Why do we need a book?
Said Luke, who had never had much use for them. But this part, Alex was sure of. This is a battle now, he said. They got Dr. Aditi, and they almost got Ren. We need to get them. We need to stop Willoughby, the Deathwalker. He's why all this is happening, just like in New York. He searched his brain for the right expression and found it. We need to cut off the head of the snake.
You can do that with a book, can't you? Said Summers. You can send him back.
Alex looked at Summers and nodded. Aditi had said they could trust him, but now he found himself wondering how much did the old man, the old professor, already know. How much she had told him.
Can we still get it? He said. The Book of the Dead, I mean. Can you get it?
Another tired smile.
What? The old caretaker from the Campbell is going to waltz into the British Museum and walk out with an armful of ancient texts.
Alex considered it. The security at the British would be world class, especially right now. Without Aditi, that would be another battle.
But we do have some of the book here, said Summers.
Alex shook his head. I checked that out when we first got here, he said. It's just a few spells from the beginning.
But we know more now, said Ren. You should check it again.
But, Alex said,
we only need one, she said.
I guess it's worth a shot, he admitted. The case was a few rooms over. Alex surveyed the sparse selection of papyrus and linen, all covered with the rows of small symbols that made up hieroglyphic writing and illustrated with little paintings. Gods and humans, judges and judged. Alex wrapped his left hand around the scarab and felt the cold stone warm to his touch, as if alive. In the dim light of the closed collection, the ancient writing in front of him began to glow softly. Alex's eyes scanned the battered pages. As the words became clear, he read the titles out loud. Not quite a dozen in total. For going out into the day. For breathing in the land of the dead. Finally, his hand fell from his amulet. The glow faded, and the white returned to his eyes.
Not here, he said. It's none of these.
The energy drained from the room like air from a week-old birthday balloon. Suddenly, Alex turned to face Summers.
But there are more here, aren't there?
More?
Said Summers.
Yes, more of the book, other spells, said Alex. I could feel them.
Summers looked confused for a moment, but then his expression cleared.
You're right, he said. In the basement. But they're in rough shape, not suitable for display.
Alex smiled grimly.
We don't need to display them.
The basement was more shadow than light, thick cobwebs in the corners, and a shifting layer of dust on the floors completed the effect.
Lovely,
said Ren, hanging back a bit as Summers rummaged through rusty cabinets and crumpled boxes.
Is that it? Said Alex. That old box, under that table?
Summers flipped the box around and blew some dust off. Three letters came into view, written in faded magic marker. B-O-D.
It's either that or a body,
he said wryly, lifting the box up and dropping it down with a dull thud on the table. It was mostly scraps, the archaeological equivalent of a junk drawer, but Alex went through it carefully. He had one hand on his amulet and one doing the sorting, and he knew immediately that these were better. The spells upstairs had been the general ones, from the beginning of the book, the ones to help the soul first enter the afterlife. These were the specific ones, the nitty-gritty. He spread the spells that were still in good enough shape to read out on the table. Once again, he reached for his amulet, and the ancient text came alive as he read. For causing a man to be a spirit in the land of the dead. For protection against snakes in the land of the dead. For protection against grave robbers and outland thieves. For going forth and coming back. Alex stopped. Went back one. For protection against grave robbers and outland thieves. The glow faded from the hieroglyphs, and his eyes refocused on the world around him. He held up the scraggly scrap of linen, a single patch of what had once been a mummy's wrappings.
I think this is it, he said.
That? Said Luke. It looks like a 3,000-year-old cafeteria napkin from Pizza Day.
Alex smiled. The ancient Egyptians had contributed many things to civilization. Advances in math and medicine, door locks, and even toothpaste. But pizza wasn't one of them. Summers opened a manila folder, and Alex carefully deposited the spell inside.
Are you sure? Said Wren.
Unlike Luke, she understood the stakes. A deathwalker could only be sent back to the afterlife with exactly the right spell. They'd brought three to their battle with the stung man. This time, they'd be bringing one, or what was left of it.
I'm sure, said Alex, but even as he said it, he wondered, how much did he really know about Willoughby?
If you're wrong, said Wren. She didn't need to finish the thought. Alex understood. If I'm wrong, he thought, we're dead wrong. He thought back to what he'd read. A professional tomb raider. Multiple counts of theft.
It has to be, he thought. Doesn't it?
This is the one, he said, filling his voice with more confidence than he felt. He was ready for a rematch with a walker, and this was his ticket. But he had one more concern as he closed the folder on the dry and fragile linen.
I just hope the thing doesn't fall apart on us.
They filed out of the grim basement.
Need anything else? Said Summers, closing the door behind them.
They all considered the question.
Got a shovel? Said Alex.
And flashlights? Said Wren.
Luke thought about it for another moment.
I could use a Gatorade, he said.
Chapter 21 The Gathering Dark. They rode the train in silence, on their own again. Summers was back at the museum, in reserve. He'd wanted to come along, but they'd insisted, and practically run out of the place ahead of him. He would only slow them down. At his age, he had enough trouble walking, forget about running. Luke tried to imagine that. A life without running. It was the scariest thing yet. But then he hadn't seen this deathwalker thingamajig the others kept talking about. That sounded pretty scary, too. The train bumped to a stop, and Alex's overstuffed backpack shifted and clanked on the floor.
We're here,
said Wren, not sounding too happy about it. Luke stood up, grabbing Alex's backpack without asking. He was stronger, and besides, he wanted his cousin to have his hands free in case he had to use that magic bug of his. It seemed crazy, but after what he'd seen, he was willing to go with the flow on this magic stuff. There was lots of stuff he didn't understand. Like, why could he already dunk at 13 when most guys would never dunk in their life? He had a saying for things like that.
Don't break your brain.
Seems like a waste, said Wren, as they waited for the elevator to the street.
Luke didn't get it until they were halfway up.
"Because we're going right back underground?" he said to Ren.
She nodded, but he could see she was a million miles away. He didn't understand her the way he did his cousin. He'd known his little cousin was up to something as soon as Alex moved into the spare room next to his. But this girl, with her mouth clamped shut and her eyes wide open, was that fear? Determination? Both? They left the station and headed up the hill toward the cemetery. The sky was getting dark now, laced with twilight purple. The hill was steep. Good workout for the quadriceps, but halfway up, the other two stopped. Luke doubled back to see what the holdup was. In an ideal world, he'd like to reach the cemetery before it was full-on dark. Not that he was scared or anything. Alex and Ren were talking to an older couple, handing out flyers.
"No luck so far," said the lady, "but if just one person remembers seeing him that night..."
Luke looked over at the flyer she was holding. He could just make out the photo in the dim light. His eyes immediately went to the trophy. Third place, he thought.
That's sad.
But it reminded him where he'd seen it before.
"You're looking for your nephew, right?"
he said.
"Yes," said the man. "A little Robbie." "Right, right," said Luke. "Good luck."
They resumed their march up the hill. Luke's steps were heavier now, and it wasn't his quads.
"Little kids," he thought. "Was that the orders doing too, or was it this Death Walker? And, if what Alex said was true, was there even a difference?"
One final thought formed in his head, clearer than the others. Six simple words.
"What have I signed up for?"
The streets of Highgate were empty now. The old couple were the last two people they saw. There was barely even any traffic, save for a few slowly cruising police cars.
"Through here,"
said Ren, pointing to a sign that read, "Waterloo Park." The park was empty, the failing light robbing it of its color. The only sounds were night birds warming to their task. The only movement, a flock of geese drifting aimlessly across a dark pond. As they exited, Luke saw Highgate Cemetery looming like a city of the dead. At its base, across a narrow road, a single light burned. They stepped away from the trees and crossed the road. A light London fog had formed on the mossy hillside, as it did most nights, making the ground above them appear lighter than the sky. At the main gate, the windows of the building next to it were dark.
"We're alone," said Luke.
Alex reached up and clasped his amulet. "No, we're not." Chapter 22. Crypt. Alex used his amulet to force open the big lock on the main gate.
"First try, bro," said Luke as the heavy tumbler turned.
Alex began to push the gate open.
"Wait," said Ren.
"What?" said Alex, spinning around. "Did you see something?"
"No, it's just... Do we have to do this right now? At night?"
"You're kidding me," said Alex. "We're already here."
"Yeah, but I was thinking we could go back, do some more research, make sure we have everything we need."
"And come back in the morning," added Luke.
Alex didn't bother to hide his annoyance.
"Go home if you want to," he snapped. "I'm going in."
He pushed the gate the rest of the way open and slipped inside. The others exchanged quick glances, but followed reluctantly. The soft soles of their sneakers padded silently across the stone courtyard, and soon they reached the stairway cut into the hill. Alex paused at the bottom to look at the layered shadows of trees and tombstones and crosses and crypts.
"Dark up there," said Luke.
"Really dark," said Ren. "Should we get the flashlights?"
Alex looked up. The moon was barely visible behind a shifting curtain of clouds. Still, they couldn't risk being seen.
"No," said Alex. "If we stick to the main path, we'll be fine."
The pale stone of the stairs caught what little light there was. Alex took a deep breath and led the way. The others followed a few steps behind. The main trail was a little lighter, but not much. At first, Alex could follow it if he squinted. But as they climbed up the hill, the fog rolled down it. Soon, their feet were enveloped in cottony mist. Along the sides, the crypts and tombstones erupted like dark islands out of the gray, framing the pathway.
"These tombstones are huge," hissed Luke.
"That's 'cause the people are inside," Alex whispered back.
"What?"
said Luke, his voice rising. He got shushed again, and then Alex added,
"They buried them above ground."
Luke looked over at the nearest gravesite, a long stone rectangle covered in elaborate floral carvings. He gave it a wave and a whisper.
"Hey, dude."
"Shh," hissed Ren. "We're almost there."
"Where?"
whispered Luke. Ren's glare was wasted in the dark. Alex answered,
"Egyptian Avenue."
The three gathered along one side of the archway at the entrance. They peered inside, but couldn't see anything in the narrow lane between the crypts. Pitch dark, dead quiet. They listened for a solid minute before they were ready.
"Flashlights," Alex whispered.
Luke swung the backpack off gracefully without a single clunk or clang, and they all reached in and took one.
"Point 'em down," said Alex.
The flashlights lightsabered the fog at their feet. Alex edged closer to Ren as they began a slow procession toward Willoughby's crypt.
"You okay?"
he whispered.
"Little late if I wasn't,"
she shot back. Caught off guard, he didn't know how to respond. Should he apologize?
I'm fine, Alex," she said,
but a quiver in her voice said otherwise. Her next words were steadier. "I just want to get this over with."
"How will we know which one?"
Luke hissed, shining his light on each heavy, black-painted door they passed. But the next door his light hit was leaning open.
"Never mind," he whispered. "Found it."
Finding it was one thing. Going in was another. The three friends stood outside the door and looked at each other in the glow of the flashlights. Then, very slowly, Ren and Luke turned and looked at Alex.
"Yeah,"
he breathed, turning to face the door.
"Okay."
His front foot was on the edge of the open doorway. He brought his back foot up to join it. Standing on the line between life and death, he took one last look at his friends. He felt his pulse in his head and the cool night breeze against his cheek. He raised his flashlight and stepped forward. Something lashed out and struck his cheek as he crossed the doorway. Panic rose in his gut as whatever it was brushed against his face again. He whirled around, grabbing his amulet with one hand and pointing his flashlight with the other. It was
"Just some old cloth," he heard Luke say.
Centered in the beam of his flashlight, Alex saw a 6-inch strip of white fabric. It was caught on the ragged inside edge of the doorway and flapping lightly in the breeze. Alex lowered his flashlight, released the scarab, and looked back at his friends. Luke was wearing a big smile and pointing at him.
"Busted."
But Ren was looking him right in the eye, and Alex knew why. They'd both seen fresh linen like this before, or at least a picture of it.
"Come on, you guys," said Alex, waving them inside.
The crypt had a musty smell, and Alex washed his flashlight beam along the near wall, illuminating a full row of tall ceramic jars. He imagined the 170-year-old bread and dried beef and grains inside. Glad the lids were still on.
"A statue," called Ren, shining her light into the far corner.
"Whoa," said Luke. "Look at that bad boy."
A stone statue of Captain Willoughby stood in one corner of the crypt, pointing at some imaginary discovery in the distance. Alex waved his flashlight over the looming figure.
"It looks just like him," he said.
And it did. Same face, same outfit, same size. Just like him. He fixed his light on the statue's eyes. They were just as blank as he remembered, but instead of pure black, they were the elegant off-white of marble. Alex held the beam there for an extra second, just to make sure the eyes didn't blink. He exhaled.
It's weird, he said, remembering the old photo. This dude was a lot dumpier in real life.
Here's his stone box thing, said Luke. He was buried above ground, too.
Key word, was. The lid was off, and Alex knew the lead inner coffin would be empty, too, before he even dipped his flashlight beam inside. If the walker were here, he would have felt it. A question formed in the darkness.
So where is he? And what about the mummy that left that scrap of wrapping?
Alex looked back at the doorway, the wisp of cloth still flapping lightly in the breeze.
The breeze?
He licked his finger and held it up. The breeze was shifting back and forth, coming from the back of the chamber as much as the door.
He stepped slowly around the old stone coffin toward the back wall.
Shovel, he said, holding out his hand.
Shovel,
said Luke, reaching into the pack and handing over an old folding shovel from Summers' army days. They'd reached the crypt. Now, they had to go deeper. Chapter 23 Down, Down, Down. They used the little collapsible shovel not to dig, but to pry. Wren shot one more quick, nervous look behind her as Alex folded the blade halfway out and locked it into place. He slid it under the edge of the large stone slab they'd discovered against the back wall and leaned in with all his weight.
Nothing.
He bounced against the handle, grunted, strained. Nothing. He handed the shovel back to Luke, who was already stepping forward to take it. Luke didn't bounce or strain, just leaned in and applied slow, steady pressure. Wren watched him work, and the confident way he moved eased her ragged nerves a little. He had an undeniable sense for anything physical. Sure enough, the stone began to slide to the side. Once there was enough of a gap, the three of them got together and pushed. A faint glow spilled out as the gap widened. Wren let the boys finish up as she gazed inside. It was a tunnel sloping down into the hillside, with an eerie glow coming from the ceiling. She swallowed hard. She'd seen this sort of thing before, in the Stung Man's tomb. Alex took his pack back, because it held the spell, and Wren grabbed the little shovel to use as a weapon.
"Flashlights off," said Alex, standing in the eerie green-white light.
Wren looked at the back of his head as she dropped her light in the backpack. He was getting bossy again. With every bad thing that had happened to them, he'd grown angrier and more determined. He'd been halfway decent to her for, what, half a day after the attack? And now he was leading them down this dark, dirty tunnel. He was rushing them.
Why not take another night? Let me see that archaeologist book for myself, and maybe a few more.
She felt unprepared, and she hated that. To try to calm herself down, she made a mental list of all the reasons she had for being there. 1. For Alex, who needed her. 2. For his mom, who was almost like family to her, too. 3. For Aditi. 4. For that poor missing kid, and all the other ones, too. 5. Against that monster. 6. Against the Order. They moved cautiously down the tunnel, feet slow, eyes wide. Wren turned her head slightly to put one ear forward, listening for the faintest sound. 10 feet ahead, there was an opening. Flickering candlelight spilled out from inside. They crept up to it and stopped just short. Alex grasped his amulet tighter, and Wren raised her shovel. They nodded at each other. Alex ducked his head inside. He was silent for a few long seconds. Wren held her breath. Had he seen something horrible? Something they hadn't even thought to fear? He raised his hand and waved them in. She exhaled.
All clear, he whispered.
It was a little side room, the last stop on the way out of the tomb, or the first stop on the way in, like the mudroom in a house. Wren looked around. It was a pretty fancy mudroom. The walls and even the ceiling had been covered with a smooth plaster. Silver sconces held thick wax candles, and on a little shelf in the center of one wall was the single shiniest thing Wren had ever seen.
"Wow," said Luke.
"Is that?" said Alex.
"One of the crown jewels," said Wren.
It was a golden orb, ringed and topped, with a galaxy of glittering gems. She'd seen it while poring over her guidebook.
"The Sovereign's Orb, maybe?"
It reminded her of the stolen finery in the Stung Man's inner sanctum, but only a little.
"The last one just had some, like, really nice rugs," she said.
"This one is more powerful," said Alex, already turning away from the world-famous relic. "He's been awake longer." Wren had seen Willoughby's power for herself, of course, but a new thought rocked her now. How powerful could these things get?
"Let's go," said Alex.
They followed him back out into the hallway. Wren knew why he was so angry and driven, and she really hoped he found his mom soon. One, because she was worried about her too. Two, because she was worried about what the search was doing to him. Three, because she was pretty sure he'd get them all killed if he didn't find her soon. Back out in the hallway, disaster struck almost immediately.
"Something's coming." Alex stopped and put his right hand up.
"What?" said Wren.
"Something's coming," he said.
"I didn't hear anything," she whispered. He shook his head.
It wasn't something he'd seen or heard. It was something he'd sensed.
He looked down at the scarab, then closed his eyes and tightened his grip. He could feel it now, almost like a blip on some internal radar screen. Off to his left. Getting closer.
"Should we go back?"
"No way."
There was nothing back that way except the side room and, far above now, the crypt. They needed to go deeper, find the Death Walker. He looked up ahead. 10 or 15 feet in front of them, the tunnel was brighter.
"This way," he said.
As they got closer, he could see that light was spilling into the tunnel from openings on either side.
Side tunnels, he realized.
As they got closer to them, the thing he was sensing got closer too.
What is it? Is it the Walker?
He didn't think so, but he couldn't say exactly why.
"We need to go faster," he whispered.
Whatever it was, they needed to beat it to the intersection. He didn't mention that part, afraid they'd stop instead. They began hustling down the hallway, their footsteps and breathing getting louder as their pace increased. He looked back. Wren was right behind him, secure in his speed. Luke loped a little farther back.
"Keep going,"
breathed Alex, waving for Luke to pick up the pace. Luke waved back.
"Hello?"
Alex and Wren zoomed past the side tunnels and stopped. Alex tried to calm down and center himself for another look at that internal radar screen. But before he could, he saw his cousin just now reaching the intersection. Luke looked to the right, and then to the left, and then his eyes grew huge in the green glow. Whatever Alex had sensed was right there.
"Oh, snap!"
blurted Luke as a pale figure lurched out of the tunnel toward him. It reached for him with outstretched arms, grabbed for him with tightly wrapped fingers. For one horrible second, Alex thought it had him, but Luke was fast. He went from walking forward to running to the right with one quick swivel of his hips. The mummy charged stiffly after him, and they both disappeared down the passageway.
"Luke!"
Wren screamed. They both rushed back to the intersection and peered down the passageway. No sign of the mummy or Luke, and 10 feet ahead, they saw the glow of another intersection. Alex tried to push the panic out of his mind. They were in a warren of tunnels, and had just lost their strongest member. He closed his hand around the scarab and shut his eyes, trying to focus, trying to find the mummy. Nothing. Already too far away. Guilt poured into Alex like icy seawater into a sinking boat. On some level, he felt like everything that had happened was because of him. But this was his fault on every level. His cousin gone. Wren's words echoed in his head, as clear as they'd been that morning, maybe more so. "You dragged me there. You served me up." But maybe it wasn't too late to help Luke. Wren didn't say anything now, just turned with him and ran after Luke. they reached the next passageway. Which way had he gone? They took their best guess and continued on, desperately hoping they'd find him. Hoping there'd be something left to find.
You can sense them, can't you?
Ren huffed from beside him. That's why we're running.
When they're close, Alex gasped. How?
They reached another intersection. Two more choices, the odds stacking against them. They stopped, hands on knees, and Alex considered his answer.
I don't know,
he said. But he did know. He'd sensed that too. He just wasn't comfortable saying it.
Because they're